Here we go. Let's remind ourselves of the problem. And today you got to put your heads on and listen really carefully, because now we're going to start to. Part of what I fear is because we have expanded the share over 4 days, it's harder for you to follow the trail. So we're doing it slowly, in part because we had visitors, in part. But I just want to make sure you know where we are, because you can get lost in the shuffle. Okay, this is where we are. Rabbi Gamliel says the woman's believed to be Motzi Mamon. Number one. Step two. The last thing I want to hear out of Rebbe Gamliel's mouth is chazaka. Because chazaka is the last thing in the world I would expect to be motzi mamon. Or as we call it, I'm restating terms I used yesterday, chazaka de meikara. We know there's something in life called chazaka de meikara. We can lock in the last known status of the knife. We can lock in the last known status of the mikvah. We can lock in the last known status of the animal until you know the shechita was kosher. We can lock in the last known status of the wall that it had a size of a discoloration that would warrant saras. We can lock in last known statuses when we lack any evidence. That's great. That's called the chazakta meikara. However, chazakta meikara is a very weak, flimsy, vulnerable wimp. And it gets beat by everything, including Rov. How do you know that Rov beats chazaka? That's the Gemara told you in Kiddush and Nafpeh, where a little baby is holding some dough. The dough was tahor. How do we know the baby touched the dead sheretz? Because most babies touch dead sheretzes. If he touched the dead sheretz and he touched the dough, Kiddush and Nafpeh, Chachamim say, Rov beats Chazaka. So Rov beats Chazaka, and yet Rov doesn't beat Cheskes Mamon. So the last thing we'd expect is for a Chazaka to make Ara to beat a Cheskes Mamon. So before I open the Yud Beis and Yud Beis, those are my expectations. I know there's something called Chazak de Meikara. I learned it from the case of the Tsaras in the house. I know that it's useful, very useful to lock in last known statuses when I have no evidence. But it's a very, very weak procedure to lock in last known statuses, because things in life change, obviously. Mikvos deplete and knives get jagged and walls, discolorations recede. So I don't know when it happened. I know it did happen, so I'll just lock it in until I know otherwise. Okay. But how could Rabbi Gamliel allow the woman to say, you know what, I was a basula, let's assume I was a basula, lock it into the last possible minute, to use that to be motzi mamon. So the best solution is, no, chazaka cannot be motzi mamon. That is apikorsis. Chas v'shalom. Tell your parents, what did you learn today in English? Apikorsis. But as far as I'm concerned, this is apikorsis. Apikorsis. What did Rabbi Gamliel mean when he said that, or the Gemara meant? Come on. No, that's today's year. That's the easiest way. Tzerufin, PBJ. No one in their right mind would ever dare say that Chazaka can be Motzi Mamon alone. That is apikorsis. What we have in our sugya, this is the best way to learn. It ends here quickly, and it protects the system of halacha against chidushin. Chazaka, along with Bari V'Shema, can beat Cheskes Mamon. The Gemara thought that she wins because of a Bari B'Shema. She's a Bari that when he's a Shema. And it says, no, even according to Rav Nachman, she would win, because in addition to the Bari B'Shema, which is insufficient to be Motzi Mamon, here you have a Chazaka de Meikara that her body was a Psula, and we assume she was a Psula to the last possible moment. Which Rishonim say it's Tzerufim? Give me a list of three Rishonim that say Tzerufim. Mordechai. Balamor. Miri. Ramban that we didn't see inside. Correct. Now, if there are tzerufim, we pretty much discuss three different approaches. One approach is the 1 + 1 = better than 2 approach, better than 1 approach, as we saw in the Balamor and the Ramban. You can therefore Mordechai make swaps. It could be Bar V'Shem and Chazaka, it could be Rav and Chazaka, it could be Migo and Chazaka, as Mordechai said. So basically, just find two factors, stack them up against that other factor, and the two will beat one. It's a fascinating question. I'll say something, I'll throw it out there just because it's Thanksgiving, and I'm grateful for Lumdus. Okay, I have many gratuitous Thanksgiving references in this year. So I'm grateful for Lumdus. Okay, it could be a logic that if there are three options, and two options lead to one psak, and one option leads to another psak, you follow the options, right? There are two ways to reach one psak, Bar V'Shema or Chazaka. There's one way to reach a different psak, Cheskes Mamon, to support the Baal. Anytime I've got three factors, two of which lead to one psak, one of which leads to another psak, I follow Trei B'Makom Chad. I don't care what those two are. What does that sound like? When did we see this before? Svek Svek, Rav Tzadim. So at meta logic, it could be that in the halachic system, I create vectors of potential when I've got three scenarios, two of which, that's a little bit different, because Svek Svek is only one factor, but three different permutations. Whereas here I've got three different factors. If I use the Rov, she would win. If I use the Chazaka, she would win. If I use the Cheskes Mammon, he would win. If I use the Bayi Shema, she would win. So anytime I've got three factors that are affecting the case, two of the factors are tilting in one direction, one factor in another direction, I follow the more dominant logical possibility. So it's a fascinating meta-halachic question for all of our meta processors to see the relationship between Sfek Sveika and between Trev and Makum Chai. Another way to understand Tzirufim, Chanan, Peter, Barangeli, is to say, like the Meiri said, and to say, like the Shittim, but it's a fascinating issue. We don't have time to say. What do they say? Who's doing the heavy lifting here?
Bar Vishama
just needs a helper. Just needs someone to, like, hold up, like a little guy to hold up the side of the way. Who says that's a Meiri? That's Shittim Kubatsis. So there's no way in the world of Chazaka de Meikara, like a Cheska Sagof, and we all know that Cheska Sagof is a Chazaka de Meikara. There's no way in the world that should. Please, someone remind me. I took the only key to the office. I forgot to lock it. I made photos. I got to return this after the show. I'm going to forget it.
There's only one key to the office.
Yes. And it's hidden in a certain place. Yes, because it's a special lock. Okay, Aaron, don't take me into the rabbit hole, okay? Just think about how you're going to survive Cornell as a macro orienter, okay? You take a good time to think about not going to the basketball game with the C flag. Same time in the base matters with Rabbi. Who was the Rabbi? The Gushka, right?
Changed
okay. Okay. Anyway, we're staying in Israel. But getting back. Okay. So getting back. These are like subliminal Thanksgiving messages. Okay. I'm grateful for the chance to brainwash you, Adam. Okay. So another way to understand Tzirufim is that the Baruch Hashem is really Motzi even according to Rav Nachman, which is a fascinating concept, that even according to Rav Nachman, Baruch Hashem is not Motzi, but it really is Motzi as long as you can summon something. What language did the Meiri use? What's that something you have to summon? A sod. What language did the Shittim of Betzis use? You have to summon? It's a fascinating, fascinating revolutionary concept, which we don't have time to talk about. The third option is something you talked about a few weeks ago, where Cheskes Mammon has two components to it. We need one Muchzakas degrader. We need one Beirer. That's why Migo and Bar Vishem are so useful, because they complement each other. Bar Vishem degrades the Muchzakas. Migo was a Beirer. Maybe you could swap in Chazaka. Many different ways to say Tzirufim. And basically, we end the sugya there. Okay, now, what raised our attention? That Cheskes Haguf is not just your average Chazaka de Meikara, which is wimpy, which can't be Motzi Mammon, but will allow maybe to team up as just the jelly in the sandwich, but nothing more. There are three things we saw yesterday, and we're going to pick up with it today. I'm going to flip the order. The first thing has nothing to do with our sugya, but all of a sudden we're starting to scratch our heads. You know what? Maybe Cheskes Haguf is something a little bit different than Chazaka de Meikara, than your mikvah Chazaka, than your knife Chazaka, than your wall Chazaka, than your... Maybe Cheskes Haguf is different. Where did we see this statement outside of our sugya? Where did we see this statement outside of the sugya?
Rashi,
that's in the sugya. Lamed Vav is in the sugya. Where did we see it outside of the sugya proof? Remember Rava said on Ayin Ham and Beis, don't think that Rabbi Yeshua doesn't trust Cheskes Haguf. Rabbi Yeshua trusts Cheskes Haguf as well. And not only does Yeshua trust Cheskes Haguf as well, he allows Cheskes Haguf to finish the line, beat every other Chazak in the world, except for Cheskes Mammon. And that's where he and Rabbi Gamliel differ. For whatever reason, is it a quantitative difference? Is it a categorical difference? But all of a sudden, before, let's say we never learned Yud Beis. Let's say someone stops you on the street and says, I'm not interested in Yud Beis. Yud Beis confuses me. I don't like the number 12. Don't start talking to me about Rabbi Gamliel or Yeshua. In your mind, is Cheskes Haguf, physical state, is it a regular mikvah knife chazaka, or is it a different chazaka? Can you prove to me? Well, I think it may be different. How do you know? Rabbi Yeshua's statement that Rav quotes. Again, this is Rav according to Rabbi Yeshua, the way Tosfos has explained. There are many, many. I wish I could teach this to you for 2 years, because that's how much material this is. Let's just read Ayin Hayim at base. I'm still like processing this sugya. Every time I learn it, every time I go back to it, it just takes me to a different place. Okay, but let's go to Ayin Beis. Amar Rava. This is Rava according to Yeshua. Lo Tema. Don't extract from Yeshua's anti-Chazaka stance. Don't extract from that Rabbi Yeshua lo azul bas Chazaka duvuklal. No. Even Rabbi Yeshua likes it, bas it. Cheskes Haguf life matters. Ela kilo azul Yeshua bas Chazaka duvukla. Gratuitous. Hecha deika Chazaka duvimona. Ava hecha deleka Chazaka duvimona. So azul Yeshua bas Chazaka duvukla. Rava trumpets Cheskes Haguf as the better chazaka than knife mikvah chazakos, even according to Rabbi Yeshua, doesn't allow to be motzi mamon. I've just read the Gemara the way Tosfos reads it. There are three other ways to read this Gemara. It's only Rava. So keep in mind, this is Rava saying something about Rabbi Yeshua's view of cheskes haguf. The way Tosfos understood it, the way we read it, cheskes haguf is superior. So all of a sudden, we start thinking that a cheskes haguf is not your average chazaka. Not your average chazaka to make our. It's so many words, I have to make sure that you differentiate. Now, in our sugya, we saw two gemaras that may make us think that cheskes haguf is superior to your average chazaka de mekara, and it alone, without the assistance of a bari v'shemba, kibi motzi mamon. What's the first gemara we saw yesterday? We'll start lamed vav. Lamed vav, Yechiel, why is there no bari v'shemba to assist or to help on lamed vav? One word? Okay, and therefore, what's happening? Give me the one word.
Tanina.
Very good. Because on the Lamidav, we have Tanina. Kush, Yechiel, she's a Chereshes, but we have Tanina. You can't generate a Bar B'Shema when someone else is making the claim. That's ridiculous. You may be able to generate Bar B'Shema where you're making the claim, Sam, on someone else's information. What do we say when you're making a claim based on someone else's information? What do we call that? Bar Yedayachar. Why say it's my brother? Because my brother told me. But here, it's a Chereshes. She can't say anything. She just walked away something like this. So I'm saying maybe, basically making a claim for her. That's what you didn't get yesterday. Bar Yedayachar and a Tanina. Taninas don't say anything. We're just saying it for you. It can't be Bar B'Shema or Basin's a Bar B'Shema. So in Daf Lamed Vav, the way Rashi read the Gemara, not the way Tosfos read the Gemara. If you want to take the simple route to this sugya and the simple solution, you could just explain away Lamed Vav and say that's not what the Gemara Lamed Vav is saying. And the reason you can't make a Tanis Pesulin against a Chereshes is not because Basin will rally to her support and make a claim for her and thereby activate her Cheskes Haguf that tells us she was a Pesula until the last moment. Nah, that's not why you don't have a Tanis Pesulin for a Chereshes. Tosa says, I'll say this again, if you didn't follow yesterday, you don't follow today, it's fine. You know why there's no Tanis Pesulin for a Chereshes? Because we assume that she was not a Pesulin at the time of the wedding. There's no Cheskes Haguf here, because Cheskes Haguf can't be an autonomous player. You know why the Baal can't ruin her Ksuva by a Chereshes? Because you knew you're marrying a Bula. There are two ways for the Baal to lose. Either because we assume she was a Basula to the last moment, or because she was a Baula from the get-go, but she knew it, and it's not a Mekachdas. So there are two paths to victory for the Baal. When the Mishnah, the Gemara says, by Chereshes, the Baal can't ruin her Ksuva, is it because we activate Cheskes Haguf, even in the absence of Bari V'Shema? Or we can activate Cheskes Haguf because we don't have a Bari V'Shema Yechiel, because there's Taninon, and we need Bari V'Shema. And the reason the Baal can't ruin the Ksuva is because you knew that she was a Ba'ula, and even if she was a Ba'ula before, you knew what you were getting into. So you can flip the Gemara on its head. Every Gemara could be flipped. Okay, so we don't necessarily, Zach, have a raya from Daf Lamed Vav, but the way Rashi learned, we have a raya that Chazaka works alone. And then the next Gemara was Ayin Vav, where we had the strange Mishnah, which we're going to try to tackle today, that at least Rav Ashi made one difference, and we'll see Rava's difference. So that's where we are right now. You see how we developed our ideas. We start with a simple approach. Don't make change unless you're forced to. Keep the system intact. Keep everything going. Stay in the game. Hang around. You may win the game. Hang around to little Thanksgiving roads. I know who won. Did the Giants win yesterday?
No.
Okay. Hang around. Did they get cream?
No.
Okay. My father's a big Giants fan, so I have to keep myself up to date. So when I speak to him, he likes to. Barkley, right? There's a Barkley. Okay, right. So the running back, right? So gotta be up to date. So when I speak to my daddy, I can share. He's a big, big Giants fan. Like they win, he's gonna be sad today. Okay, so hang around in the game. Okay, just keep things. Don't give away. Don't turn out. Don't give away. Just keep it all in front of you. There's an easy way to learn the sugya. No big chidushim. It's all chazaka helping out Bari V'Shema. Chazak de Meikara would never in a million years be able to be Motzi Mamon. Cheskes Haguf is a form of Chazak de Meikara. And this sugya will solve. It's a combination. Lamed Vav is not really what Rashi's saying in Ayin Vav. And in fact, we saw the way the Ramban learned Ayin Vav according to Ravashi. Then in one case, you have a Bari V'Shema, namely in the Reisha, you don't have a Bari V'Shema. It's every door. We'll talk about it again later, maybe today. But it sounds like Rashi didn't learn the sugya Lamed Vav that way. He didn't learn the sugya Ayin Vav that way. So if Chazaka de Meikara is different from Cheskes Haguf, or say differently, Cheskes Haguf is different from Chazaka de Meikara and it's superior to Motzi Mamon, what is it? Okay, there are about seven options. We're going to talk about two easy ones. Now, the two most classic ones today. Okay, say something simple. Don't shoot for the stars. Just move up one madrega of the klipos. One madrega of the klipos. One at a time. Logical thinking. Move up one slot at a time. Don't try to swing for the fences. As opposed to baseball, lamdos is not a home run game. You want to go singles and doubles, because otherwise you're going to strike out a lot. Yes?
Could you say that for those of Guff, since you have more knowledge about it, it's a mirror?
Okay, very good. I'll take the seifa of your statement, and we'll try to sharpen the ratio. Okay, very good, Zach. Okay? Zach is now moving cheskas haguf into a different category. Remember, we used to not think in categories. We used to think in quantities. Stronger, weaker, lighter. Now Zach's saying maybe it's a different category. He's giving a name for the category. What you're not doing, and I'll help you out here, is you're not yet giving a name for the other category. It's not this, but it's Beor. So what is Chazak de Meikar? What's Chazkas de Meikar? Very good. Very good. Okay. So now say it in English. So we all know what you're talking about.
It's not a procedural victory. It's fact.
Okay. Why is Chazak de Meikar a procedure? Bring it home.
Because you had a certain status then, so we're just going to assume
right. Say, well, you're missing one line. You're 95% of the way home, Gavi.
We don't have any proof, so we got to just go back.
I'll change the word. Chazaka de Meikara is not based on logic. There's no logic to delay a change as opposed to accelerate a change. The mikvah was tested on Tuesday, 40 sa. It was tested on Thursday, less than 40 sa. So there was a change. Now we want to know whether it happened a minute ago or it happened sometime later. Again, we're not talking about evaporation, we're talking about some event. Whenever there's an event that makes a change, there's no logic to say it happened later rather than earlier. That's what Chazak de Meikar is. Let's assume the knife was straight and smooth until the last possible. There's no logic to it. Hence, Zach, since there's no logic, what is it? It's a procedure. It's a procedure. There's no logic here. It's a procedure that we just have to lock in the last day. It's that we, in theory, if let's say we were to decide to work the opposite way, then we'll assume the event that caused the change happened as early as possible. It would be just as logical. It wouldn't be counterintuitive. We're making a decision. Now, obviously, it's easier to play the game that way, to assume it happened the last minute, but it's not like there's any logic dictating a later assignment or an earlier assignment, which is what Chazak is. I'm giving you real basic ideas here about Chazak. If you listen carefully, you'll have really good DNA for Chazak to make art for the rest of your life, like how to phrase it, how to articulate it. Okay? So there's no logic. Since there's no logic, it's your consummate Hachra. I'll answer one moment. Now, there are different ways to spin that. We're not going to get into Chazak at the Meikar now, but the different ways to say how we go about applying the procedure, what are we actually doing? Are we paskening? Are we extending certain realities? But either way, it is a non-logical decision. Non-logical decisions we call Hachras, right? The ultimate non-logical Hachra would be Savik Yaisa L'Chorma, Savik Yaisa L'Kula. There's no logic that would tell me that if I have, let's say, a safek, Gavi, about a hot hamburger and cold milk, which would be a deraisa. Oh, they have to be machmir. But I have a safek about, let's say, cold turkey and cold milk, which would be derabanan, or turkey and milk, which are going, we pass them derabanan. All of a sudden, would be, there's no logic to it. I'm just saying, it's deraisa, I'll follow one procedure. Derabanan, I'll follow another procedure. Or a safek, tamar b'rishasay, achar, I'll be machmir. Safek, tamar b'rishasay, there's no logic to it. It just means that if it's an Rosh Hashanah, I'll follow one set of protocols. If it's an Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, I'll follow a different set of protocols. So you're the same thing. There's no logic to early. Oh, yeah, yeah. Are you right?
Yeah.
Okay, there's no. No, be careful.
Chairs are falling.
No.
Yeah. I think we should get some new chairs.
Yeah. Maybe some real chairs.
No, this is Thanksgiving. Like the early pilgrims, are probably sat on makeshift rickety chairs, and the Indians probably gave them the bad chairs. Okay. So there's nothing to assume that chair broke earlier or later. It just we make a protocol. No. Is that the broken one?
No.
Okay. So just put it out to pasture. And you put it here. We'll lie it out. Okay. We'll say a kaddish for it afterwards. But keep it there. Not a way. Okay. So there's nothing. There's nothing logical about an early assignment or a later assignment. That's why it's a hachra. Okay, what did I say? Did you have a question on Sam? Go ahead. Okay, no, we're not even close. We're not even close. God, there's not one possibility. Okay. Zach's saying that there is something, I'm not even going to call it the dreaded chet word, because I don't want you to confuse it, the dreaded ches word, but there is some situation that looks like a chazaka de meikara, and it sounds and smells like a chazaka de meikara, and it behaves like a chazaka de meikara, because we're delaying an event to the last possible moment, so it sounds like we're delaying the event of the knife becoming jagged, we're delaying the event of the mikveh becoming chaser, we're delaying the event of the woman becoming a bu'ula or having a woman. But it looks, sounds, smells, and acts like the dreaded ches, and sometimes the Gemara will actually use the dreaded ches word to call it, but it's not really that dreaded ches, it's something totally different. What does the Gemara call that? Ches kesegov. And that's not an illogical procedural decision, that's based on logic. Okay, you see how, Zach, I'm taking what you're saying, and just less is more. Say things and say to yourself again and again and again and again until you know what you're talking about, but not just terms. Say, think, talk, articulate, get it out there, then you know what you're referring to. Don't just say, it's a this or a that. Okay, there's some logic. Now, what makes this, I'll call it this, non-cheskes hagof, or this cheskes hagof, which is not your average chazaka, what makes it more logical? What are the factors? You said it before, Zach, maybe change it a little bit. What makes it more logical, more empirical? As opposed to chazaka de meikara, which we want to lock in last known state, what makes cheskes haguf different? Natural and physical. Every chazaka is physical, right? Physical state of the knife, physical state of the mikvah, physical state of the wall. We'll talk about non-physical chazaka. It's a big world of chazakas out there. Statuses that we lock in, you had a cheskes kashrus, cheskes tzidkus. But certainly we're in the upper tier of chazakas where we're dealing with physical states. Right, those are very compelling chazakos. Physical state of the mikvah, we assume it at 40 sa. Physical state of the knife, we assume it at physical state. We're dealing with locking in physical states. But these are not physical states. Give me a good word. As opposed to regular chazaka de meikara, which are physical states that were
created.
Very good, generated. You made a knife, you filled the mikvah, or if they were not human authored, each of these, by the way, could be different. But now I'm creating, I'm fixing all those variables as one to contrast it with cheskes haguf. But you could distinguish between a knife which human beings created and a wall that became discolored through non-human forces. But for now, these are generated, event-based statuses that we then lock in, as opposed to statuses which are so common that they're built and baked into nature. Namely, that women are born basulos, or women are born unblemished. And Zach is suggesting that our ability to say that that natural state remain unchanged for as long as possible, that ability is not just a procedure, that borders on a error. All of a sudden we're saying it's logical, this is a proof. It's a proof because if there are things that are natural and the change is moving away from the natural state, right? There's no difference in nature between a smooth knife, which is kasher for shechita, and a jagged knife, which is non-kasher for shechita. There's no difference in nature between a 40 saw collection of water or a less than 40 saw collection of water. So there, it's not like one is more natural, one is other. These are just arbitrary decisions, arbitrary differences, right? If you want to kill someone, there's no difference between a jagged knife or a smooth knife. Right? Never having killed someone, I imagine they're the same. They're only different for halacha of shechita. So we want to know whether we can lock in an arbitrary difference that has no basis in nature that had to be achieved by some event. What difference does it make whether it happened earlier or happened later? But when Hashem put certain things into nature, so they're less changeable. And when they change, we have to, because that's the way Hashem wired us as human beings. If I thought that Eli Nat would become Eitan Nisal in the next 10 seconds, I'd go out of my mind. So I have to assume that Eli Nat will remain Eli Nat and Eitan Nisal. So even though if you just broke it down, Gavri, and you're a mathematician, there's really no difference, right? What difference does it make between an early assignment or a later assignment of a mikvah depletion and an early assignment and a late assignment of the mum? It's not like having a mum is harder, right? A mum, you just, something happens. You woke up with a mum. Or, you know, she had an accident. She's no longer basula. So from a purely mathematical standpoint, there's no difference. But from a psychological standpoint, the way we process information, there's a difference in the way I see people becoming deformed or losing their basulin, and I see. It's really important that you get this, because I don't know that I agree with you, Zach. I don't mean you. People have said this before you. Because if you just break it down to pure math, Rabbi Targan, what's the difference? They're both the same logic. There's no logic dictating early or late assignment of a mikvah change, and there's no logic dictating earlier or later assignment to the mum. Maybe the mum happened earlier because in earlier times they were less healthy. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's counterintuitive to say the mum happened later. Maybe it's counterintuitive to say that the psilon happened later. So it's not based on logic. It's based on human experience. Human experience, I don't make any assumptions about knives. You tell me a knife, I don't know. It could be jagged, it could be smooth. Human beings, I don't make any assumptions about mikvah. They have 40 seconds of less than 40 seconds. But when you tell me about a woman, or a man in this case as well, I assume that they're non-blemished when they're born. And when you tell me about a woman, in my mind, I think of a woman who's a psula. So therefore, the change, it's logical for me. The way, it's not logic, what would I call it? I'd call it psychologic. It's human logic. The way I process, I assume if you tell me a woman had a mum, I assume it happened a minute ago. The percentages aren't different. But you tell me, oh, that person has cancer. So, yeah, they got, you know, yesterday. My immediate mind is, you know, oh, they got sick yesterday, went to the doctor. Because that's how I process, because I assume Baruch Hashem, people are born healthy. You tell me an accident happened, it happened yesterday. No, it happened fine. It's really important that you get this, because if you just break it down to pure percentages, there's absolutely no difference. But the way we process information dictates the way we gauge information. So this is a logical way of processing. And therefore, it's a bearer, and as a bearer, it's going to be totally different, which I'll tell you in a moment after Gavri asks this question. Yes?
What would you say about, like, a disease of lying dormant, for example? I assume it'd be considered a mum, so it kind of occupies both, because it was originally there, but it only manifests.
Correct. As you can well imagine, we've opened a big, big, big Pandora's box. We can start gauging. Again, for them, it was probably harder to gauge that, because they weren't able to detect moment before they emerge. For us, it would be very, very different. But even in Shas, you've got a million chazakas. Fascinatingly, although people collated all the migos, the shach, and people collated all the svekos, the shach, people collated all the tvisa cases, no one to my mind ever wrote a book, an exhaustive sefer, of all the chazakos and trying to differentiate between them. But it would be a fascinating sefer. Maybe one of you will write that sefer. And you'll call it, I don't know what you'll call it. You'll call it the embrace of fatigue. I don't know what you'll call the sefer, but... Yes, Sam.
If it's a bureau, then why is it our last resort?
No, it's not our last resort. No. Okay, so thank you for your cue. So being that it's a bearer, so at the very, very least, even if it's not motzi mamon, it would be our last resort or first resort. It would be our first resort. It would beat other chazakat demeikara, which are not Beirurim. Who said that Cheskes HaGuf beats other Chazakot Zemeikara? Maybe Yeshua going to Rabba. That's why he beats them, because one is a Beirur, and the others are just Chazakot Zemeikara. To see this language, before I get back to our sugya, let's read the Beis Yaakov, who was on the Makaris yesterday. Anyone remember who the Beis Yaakov was? Did I tell you about him? Okay, the Beis Yaakov is a very, very, very important sefer, written by a very, very important person, who we otherwise know as the Nesivos HaMishpat. So this is the Nesivos' Sefer on Ksivos. Remind us who the Nesivos was, what was his name, where did he live, what was his family name, what did he do, who did he hang with, anything? Okay, late 18th century, okay? While the pilgrims were having their autumn feast, there was a man in the Polish town of Lisa changing history. So some people were fressing, some people were changing history. So Rabbi Yaakov of Lisa was having his was writing Chiddush Torah, prodigious author. He wrote the Nesivos HaMishpat and Choshen HaMishpat. Rav Yaakov Leiberbaim, who was friendly with the Ktzos, Rav Aryeh Heller, Ktzos Avne Miluim Shev Shmeitza, those three, the trifecta. They had the Ktzos wrote the Nesivos, who wrote first, right? The Ktzos wrote his sefer. The Nesivos wrote against the Ktzos. I mean, 90% of it is not arguing with the Ktzos, but he argues with the Ktzos. And then the Ktzos wrote a response called the Meshovev Nesivos. I'm going to answer back to the Nesivos. And then the Nesivos wrote some sefer. I don't know the name of it. It was published after his death, getting back at the Ktzos. But they were colleagues. They were good friends with one another. The famous story, the story popped into my mind. Reb Chaim was very instrumental in leading Torah organizations in the early part of the 20th century. Reb Chaim passed away in 1918. So he was very instrumental in raising that Agudas Yisrael. Remember, this was a fascinating time because Jewish communities were first starting to become organized. And in the past, they didn't really have There was something called the Vat Arba Aratzos, which organized the affairs of the Jewish community, but that disbanded in the 18th century. So from, let's say, the mid-18th century till about the late 19th century, there were no autonomous Jewish organizations that tried. They were like here and there. It was more localized. And Nota Behuda was very close to Queen Mary, whatever her name was, of the Habsburg Empire. So there were people who were interlopers. But now people had a sense less organized. This is a great age of organization, socialism and Bundes and labor unions. There were Jewish labor unions, obviously. So the Torah world is starting to organize in lockstep, parallel to the non-Torah world. And that's where you get Agudas Yisrael and the Zionist Congress. It's like, let's take our ideas and organize, even though we don't have a country, but we still have an identity and a nation. So he was very instrumental in Agudas Yisrael. But he was a very fiery person, Reb Chaim. So at some point, at an Agudas Yisrael convention, Rabbeinu Meir Simcha, otherwise known as the Or Samech, Rabbeinu Meir Simcha, the Or Samech, got up to say something at one of these conversations or council meetings that Reb Chaim sharply disagreed with. So Reb Chaim, don't do this at home, basically turned away and wouldn't look at Rabbeinu Meir Simcha while he was talking. So Rabbeinu Meir Simcha, one of the biggest gedolim of the period, he's talking about his idea. Reb Chaim was so opposed to the idea that he wouldn't look at it. It was like walking out of the UN when Israel came. He boycotted him there, Simcha. Okay, so he goes back to his hotel, and then he's about to leave town after the organization, and he calls, I think, with his son or his Talmud, and says, we're leaving town, but before we go to the train, I want to go say goodbye to Rebbeinu Meir Simcha, to Davinsky Rav. What do you mean? You like barely looked at him. Reb Chaim said, I'm not that against him. He's one of the biggest gedolim of our period. He said that. One of the biggest gedolim of our period. I just felt this is ideas. I can't accept his ideas. Learn to differentiate between people and ideas. You can sharply disagree with a person and their ideas, but it doesn't mean you defame or denigrate or in any way disrespect the person. Not just when they're gedolim, like a better man of Simcha, than a seer of something else, even when they're average people. You can be fiery and passionate about your opinions, but it shouldn't filter into character assassination and hatred and chas v'shalom. So anyway, so he wrote, but there were colleagues, Excels, and Sivas, and Sivas, Excels. He wrote a sefer in Yerodea called Chavos Das, a very famous sefer. You don't want to read the sefer. It's a very, very big Machmir sefer, so we try to avoid the Chavos Das sometimes in the Chos Nitzan. We're looking for Kulos especially. Obviously, you don't avoid it, but he's very, very Machmir. He wrote a sefer in Psachim called Chok Yaakov. He wrote a Haggadah called Maisa Nisim. Wrote. He wrote a sefer in Gittin called Taras Gittin. He wrote a sefer in Ksuvas called Beis Yaakov because his name was Ben Yaakov and Lisa. That phrase, Beis Yaakov, where does it come from, by the way? Where's the first instance? Kosam Rada Beis Yaakov, Zageda Bnei Israel. It also appears in Ovadia, Haya Beis Yaakov Le'esh, Beis Yudah. So that phrase would later become associated with girls' education, which was also a very important aspect of early 20th century. So you can tell your parents today, what did you learn? Api Kursus and Beis Yaakov. Okay. We want a refund. We didn't send our boys to learn Api Kursus and Beis Yaakov. So the Beis Yaakov is the Nesivos HaSefer. He says what Zach just said. Okay, so let's read the end. Okay, I'm not going to give you all the play-by-play. You had enough of that last night. Okay, Lefi Hanal, Miyushav Dedavka B'Yavamos, like a last part, like a Cheskas Yibam. So regular Chazaka, like a Cheskas Yibam. V'hu, here's the key words. Look for the key words. V'hu Chazaka Dedina. You see that? When he says Din, what word does he mean? Chazaka Dedina? Say it in English. Procedure. Dina is just illogic, just din, protocol. Okay? Uvazer Ruba Adiv. So Ruba would be the Chazaka de Meikar, which is the Chazaka de Dina. Av Becheskes Haguf, Kaching Kaching. Cheskes Haguf, Shaguf Nishtana Mechamosha Haya. Alim Tuva vi Adiv Miruva. Alim means it's strong, but it can be compared to Rav. We know that Rav is a bearer. So if we're comparing Cheskes Haguf to Rav as opposed to Chazaka de Meikar, which I call Cheskes Dina, again, you see, brisker thinking without the brisker language and methodology. If Chaim would say this, which he probably did but never wrote it, he would say, Yesh Tzvei Dina, Yesh Tehalach, Yesh Chazak Demekar, Shubigeder Hachra, Yesh Chazak Cheskasagor, Shubigeder Beirah. The Nesivos is saying this, he probably knew it, but he just threw out words and everyone in the room knew what they were talking about. Chaim was saying, let's get the language and let's provide clarity. Clarity. Okay? So, if Cheskas Haguf is a Beirah, so according to Rabbi Yehoshua, it would be, Sam.
If it's a beirur, then it would be
chazaka
meikara,
but not chazaka meikara. And Rabbi Gamliel may say it's a strong enough beirur not just to be chazaka meikara, but even to be chazaka mam. And that would be the space between Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Gamliel. Again, it's a quantitative space. How do I know what type of a beirur it is? Why would it only be chazaka meikara? Why would it be stronger? But that's one way to view A, the autonomous power of chazkas haguf to overcome chazkas mamon, and to say that maybe even Rabbi Yeshua would agree to it. Now, those are two separate pieces. You can, in theory, say that when Gamliel holds it's a bearer, and as a bearer beats chazkas mamon, Rabbi Yeshua, I'll read Rava some other way. Who says that Rabbi Yeshua feels that chazkas haguf is so special? Maybe there's another way to read Rava, and maybe it's only Rava, because only Rava said that according to Rabbi Yeshua. Another way is to read the Gemara, that why, if you're not sure whether the white comes before, white hair before the yellow before the white, there are other ways to read why Rabbi Yeshua would be Mitar in that case. But in theory, this is our first major change. One second, Sam. Our first major change that as opposed to Chazaka Demeikara, which has no logical foundation, Cheskas Haguf has some, I won't call it logic, but psychologic, human logic, not cold, objectified logic, but it has human logic. Where, tell me someone suffered a mishap, it probably happened a few minutes ago, and that's how I process information. So therefore, we can use it as a beirur. Since it's a beirur, it may be capable of accomplishing things that Chazaka Demeikara cannot. Namely, it can be Chazaka Demeikara, and it may even be Motzi Mamon unilaterally or autonomously. Now here's a very important part of the shir. Listen carefully, because we said this before. I want to make sure we say it again and you understand. Very often, when you make a category change, you say, oh, it's not just weakish, wimpish, flimsy, X. It's stronger, Y. And it's more capable because it's stronger, Y. So on the one hand, I give it greater potential, but I may also, I'm going to say it because you're not going to know what I'm talking about, I may shrink its application. In order to be Superman, you got to come from planet Krypton. Oh, I should have known. You got to come from planet Krypton. Okay, so in order to be Batman, assuming Batman is weaker than Superman, I know, guys, don't kill me on this one. Okay, assuming Batman, you just be any old guy who just goes to works out. But to be Superman, you have to come from planet. So the stronger you are, the more limited the amount of cases that I would accept. I would shrink it. Okay, so here, all of a sudden, I'm looking down the barrel of Dafayin Hei Nayin Vav. Because we thought you could just apply Cheskas Haguf whenever you wanted to. Turns out that you can only apply Cheskas Haguf to the woman's benefit under certain conditions. You see how these two logical statements are starting to overlap? Cheskas Haguf can do more than regular Chazakos, but you need certain conditions in order to apply it. Just before you raise your hand, that's going to happen all over Shas, where you're going to establish a different category. On the one hand, it's going to give it greater potency. On the other hand, it's going to give it lesser sweep. Those are two linked issues. And you can start to see Rishonim talking about different issues, but really talking about the same category. Okay, so learn that there's a logical, there's a logical codependency between greater potency and more limited application. Okay, so in life and among this, always reflects life. You can probably think about a million things of life where you have this codependency. So on the one hand, we've seen Cheskas Haguf capable on Daf Yud Beis, capable according to Yeshua on Daf Ayin Hei, of things that regular Chazaka Demeikara are not capable of. And alongside of that, we also see Cheskas Haguf being severely limited in its applicability. And let's go back to Rav Ashi, the way at least we may feel Rashi understood. Okay? I'll tell you what, instead of starting with Rav Ashi, okay, let's start with Daf Lamed Vav, because this is maybe the way Rashi reads Rav Ashi. Okay? On Daf Lamed Vav. Okay? So Yechiel, remember, we don't have a Bar Yishema, at least if you read it the way Rashi read the Gemara Lamed Vav, which tipped us off that you have a Cheskas Haguf operating without a Bar Yishema. Okay? But we did need one thing. What did we need for the Cheskas Haguf to operate? We couldn't activate the Cheskas Haguf on behalf of this Chereshes. Again, if you didn't see the Gemara that well, he says, Chereshes, wife of mine, you were a Ba'ul at the time of marriage. She has a Cheskas Haguf, implying that she was not a Ba'ul at the time of marriage. She became a Ba'ul a minute ago. So she should have a Cheskas Haguf, and she should win, according to Megamliel.
We need a Bari.
We need a Bari. Not a Bari Vishama. We don't need this new thing called comparing claims. And how do we generate a Bari?
Tanina.
Why? Why do we even need Tanina? Why can't that just say the husband's making a claim, her cheskes haguf contravenes his claim, and she wins? Why do I have to actually have Beis Din say, well, maybe it happened a minute ago, and she has a cheskes haguf through Tanina? Let's say there weren't a trick called Tanina in the world. Let's say that mechanism didn't exist. After all, we're now on the assumption that cheskes haguf is an autonomous factor, capable of being motzi mamon. Who needs to go through the whole pantomime of Beis Din lodging a claim? So what do you see from this Gemara? What's your takeaway? That cheskes haguf doesn't need other factors to be motzi mamon, other forces to be motzi mamon, but it still needs a taina. It needs a platform of a taina. It has to be platformed on a taina. You can't apply cheskes haguf without a taina. Absorb for a second. This may be what Rav Ashi was saying. Okay, now we're going to get a little bit down and dirty. We're going to have to get a little bit more complicated. Right, I really
look forward to getting a lot to discuss today. I want to get you guys down on time. I got to do a lot of stuff today.
Okay.
Let's rebuild this board.
This was the big complication on Daf Ayin Hay.
Let me make sure I can do it properly. Okay, Daf Ayin Hay. Okay, this is Erisim. Okay, this is the Nisuin. Okay, this is Cheskes Haguf. Cheskes Shleima or Besula, depending upon whether we're Yud Beis or Ayin Hay. And we want to know, did the mum occur here, in which case it's Mekach Tos, or did the mum occur here? We don't care whether it's here or here, in which case there wouldn't be, it would be no method for us. So that's our suffix. So the Gemara says it depends when you discover, the Mishnah says. If the discovery, the D, is here, then the husband wins, Nekachtas. If the discovery is here, then no method. And the woman wins. Right? Is everyone following?
Yeah.
There are two variables. The event. Let me change it. The event. Wonder whether the event is on this side or on this side. And we make that decision to determine when the event happened based on the discovery point. And that's the problem. Who cares? Why should the discovery point affect when we determine the event, especially with the testes involved? This is our dilemma. This is our enigma. Let's see. Let's everyone look at the board. You got to solve this table somehow. So Rav Ashi said, we'll get to Rava. Rav Ashi said that if the event was discovered here, so the litigation takes place here, based on the discovery of the event, where the litigation is happening, not just the event, but the litigation, we'll call it the L. Okay, so we're talking about the L. So if there's an L now, so who's the litigant? Av versus Baal. The event is discovered later. The discovery is later. The litigation is Isha versus Baal. Who cares about the L, about the litigation? So what does Rashi say? So the Ramban says, well, if it's an L, the father is talking to the Baal. He's a Bariya De'acher. According to the Ramban, where's my other thing? According to the Ramban, here, no Bari B'Shema. Ramban Rashba. Here, yes, Bari B'Shema. Because here it's Baal versus Isha, and he has no information. He just says Bari De'achar. Here it's Isha, Baal versus Av, I'm sorry. Here it's Isha versus Av. She knows she's a Bari B'Shema. Ramban's position that Cheskes Haguf still needs Bari B'Shema. What did Rashi say? It has nothing to do with Bari B'Shema. What does it have to do with? Her Cheskes Haguf can help him. Rashi may be saying the same thing. Rashi may be saying that here it's a cheskas haguf plus a tainas bari. No tainas bari, I'm sorry. No tainas bari, because it's the father. The mother doesn't know anything. Whereas here it's a cheskas haguf plus tainas bari. Rashi may be saying, it's hard to know what Rashi's saying. Rashi may be saying that Rav Ashi's distinction between discovery here and discovery here, that it affects the litigation. There's a discovery here. It's a litigation without a tainas bari because his father is his husband. He doesn't know anything.
Whereas here, the litigation is woman versus husband, and she does have a taina. Rav Ashi may be saying, if you follow Rashi, Rav Ashi may be saying that cheskas haguf doesn't need any other factor to help it, like a bar mishneh or migra, but it still needs a tainas bari platform. You need a taina. You can't just apply it. You can apply a cheskas haguf without any other forces, but you still need to platform it or a tainas bari. That's what we get from Lamedba, remember? That's why we have to say Taninan, if you read the Gemara that way. And that may be Rav Ashi's chilek. If the discovery point is here, the litigation is a litigation without a Tainas Bari, with the Cheskas HaGuf, whereas here, the litigation has a Tainas Bari. Okay, so now give me a spot. Why would Cheskas HaGuf require a Tainas Bari? Can you connect what I just said to what Zach said 20 minutes ago? Why would you need a tainas bari for a cheskas haguf? As opposed to chazaka de meikara, a cheskas haguf is, and therefore needs a tainas bari. Say what we said, but don't think of anything new. But can you match what I'm saying now to what Zach said and we've been saying the last 20 minutes? If cheskas haguf is a beirur, then you may need a taina. Chazaka de Meikara is a, and therefore you don't need a taina. Why? See how I'm doing this stage by stage? What about a hachra of a chazaka de Meikara would not require a platform of a taina? Whereas if cheskas haguf is upgraded to a beirur, as ironically is more powerful, but it can only be activated by a taina. See? It's limited, but it's more powerful. What do you think, Avi?
It sounds almost like a cheskas Meikara is something based in his using.
Beautiful, excellent. Very good abstract thinking.
She has her cheskas haguf, so right. She needs a platform with
very
which
good.
To use.
Very good, very good. What tools will based in apply unilaterally without opening up a litigation? Let me go one level higher. How do you start litigation? Is it important in halacha to say that we actually have a case that's being litigated? Or in some forces, we'll just apply without litigation, even if we haven't had a taina to open the litigation, right? Something like a shvur, you need a taina, because a shvur is clearly a very, very advanced stage of the litigation where you force them to take a shvur. So it could be that when we're thinking, is the mikvah shalem? Is the knife shalem? Is the... So that's not a case, again, we're in a monetary situation, that's not a case that I need there to be a taina too. We have to make writing assumptions about changes in life, and we'll make those writing assumptions. We'll adjust it, assuming the event happened as late as possible, whether there's a claim or not. But cheskas haguf is not just an assumption. Cheskas haguf, or in order for it to be a bearer, maybe it could also be a cheskas haguf, but in order for it to function as a bearer, bearer is evidence. We only listen to evidence when there are people making a claim and trying to muster evidence to win their case is based in. So without a taina, we're not going to bring a cheskas haguf as evidence. So could it be that this limitation, which sounds like the Gemara Lamed Vav is providing, and maybe Rav Ashi is helping us understand the Mishnah that way, is that limitation reflective of cheskas haguf being a beror rather than being just an adjustment protocol, which may not need a taina, in order for us to implement it? Very good. What? No, we're trying to say a Lamed Vav, where if not for based in stepping in and making a taina, the Chereshes has been quiet. So we have to step in and lodge a taina just to get things started. Or in the case, let's say, in the Reisha, where the discovery point and hence the litigation is between father and daughter, he doesn't really make a claim because he doesn't know anything. It's a taina, but it's not a healthy enough taina. Okay? I'm gonna because I really want to get you. I can't let Shabbos happen before I get you to the next stage. Okay? Okay, without making too much drama, let me get you to the next stage, and we'll talk about this again on Sunday. There is another way, and I want you to see it, because we've talked about this before, to make cheskas haguf stronger, a different category, not just stronger than other chazakas, but a different category. Okay, Zach, you made a different category, but it's still within the general chapter, namely, how do we solve svekos? We solve svekos through hachros, or we solve svekos through beirah. Remember, there's a whole different chapter we saw this year? Not how do we solve svekos, but what questions do we even ask? As you said, no latest on suffix. Where did we see this? If there are no questions we even ask, svekos. We don't have to ask about something that can only be us or by making two jumps, two assumptions. Could it be that that's what a cheskas haguf is? It's not more psychological that we say, oh, as opposed to cheskas to meikara, which are just locked in protocol assumptions, this has some logic to it. But Hashem tells you, you do not have to spend your whole life thinking about natural states that may be changing. And when you discover their change, sounds like Svek Svekta, right? When you discover their change, you can, you don't have to worry about, it's not that you can assume. The second I use the word assume, then I'm solving a suffix. I'm trying to place it. I'm not using the word you can assume it happened a minute ago. You don't have to worry about anything changing until you see a change. So the minute before the last minute, any time before the last minute, it's not that I say, oh, I assume it happened the last minute, not 2 minutes ago. I just can ignore that time period. See the difference between solving a suffix and ignoring thinking about a suffix, ignoring the question. What is the cheskas? Always getting something. Cheskas, I book until all of a sudden I discover she's a book. Or until I discover she's a book. Excuse me. Cheskas, I book. I assume. Well, if it happened here, I can assume it happened in the previous minute, because I'm there, or that it didn't happen before. Or can I say that Kadosh Baruch Hu gives me the right not to worry about changes of naturally occurring states? It's not even a suffix. I can totally ignore what happened before. Oh, it's not even a suffix what happened before. What do we say when there's no latest a suffix? What can that help us do when there's no latest a suffix? We treat it as a vadai, not a suffix that we've solved. We treat it as a vadai. What can we do with something that we're not even worried we're going to have to ask a question about? Motzimamos. Whenever I solve Sveikos, I may have to favor the Cheskas Mamon until I bring Edim or something strong. When I'm treating something not as a suffix that I'm solving, but as a vadai, I treat, well, let's just give name.
This would be T1. Do the opposite way. T1, T2, T3. T3 is when we discovered it. T1, it happened a minute ago. T1 is discovery. T2 was a minute ago. T3 is 2 minutes ago. So I say, look, I discovered the moment T1. I can assume that it happened T2, and if you have a subject, when I'm in T3, I can assume by my choices it didn't happen to T1. I just discovered the moon right now. So it happened a minute ago or 2 minutes ago. So the Cheskas says, okay, if the subject was a T2 or T3, Cheskas says, you know what, let's resolve the subject by assuming it happened T2, not T3. A minute ago, not 2 minutes ago. What we're saying now is that a Kadosh Baruch Hu tells me that I don't have to worry about T3. T3 in my mind is not a suffix. Did it happen T3, T2? And let's say it's T2 as opposed to T3. Because if that were true, you'd have a very hard time being Motzi Mamon. Because if you really have a live suffix, T2 or T3, you can't rule T2 in favor of T3 to be Motzi Mamon, unless you feel it's a bearer. But raising the suffix and using Chazakah to solve the suffix may be powerful, but it may not get you Hatzas Mamon. Whereas if I say that a Kadosh Baruch Hu gives me the right to ignore certain time periods, listen to what I'm saying very carefully, to ignore certain time periods, the same way I can ignore certain logical scenarios called Svek Svekai, or I can ignore anything that's us, or if it's a double jump, I can ignore earlier parts that may have changed the natural state. It's not even something I have to worry about in my halachic calculus. So I treat T3 2 minutes ago, not 1 minute ago, as if she was a Vadai Shalem, and she was a Vadai Besula, and therefore, as far as I know, I was a Vadai Besula, and a Vadai Besula could be Motzi Mamon. If I'm trying to acknowledge that it's a suffix and solve the suffix, then I run into problems. If I'm Motzi Mechaveh Levaraya, you're solving a suffix to be Motzi Mamon without Aiden. If I treat T2 or T3 as not a suffix, at T3, in this case at the point of Arison, I know that I was a Be'ula, a Besula, because I can ignore anything that happened before the point of discovery. So at that moment, it becomes something which is in the suffix. I can be Motzi Mamon. Let's read this in the Shev Shemaitza. I don't know if I'm going to get to Rava. Let's at least see the Shev Shemaitza. Why is there so many pages there? Okay, let's see what the Shev Shemaitza says for a second. While we're passing out Shev Shemaitza, Yechiel, yes? Yechiel. We'll see, Rob. What? It's very hard to say that.
Why?
because they're not naturally occurring state. You're basically saying Hashem tells me I never have to worry about earlier events.
No.
Wake up. It's not a sex thing. It's a regular suffix. Okay. Let's just see the Shev Shemaitis is saying this. He's talking about a Gemara we're not going to see, which is roughly parallel to this. Reuven sells Shimon an animal. All of a sudden, Shimon discovers there's a needle in the lungs. You want to know whether that needle, which makes the animal trefer, can't eat the meat, did the needle in the lungs occur before Reuven sold the animal to Shimon, making it a mekach das? Or the needle occurred after he sold it to Shimon, making it not a mekach das, it's just Shimon's bad luck. And even though who pays according to the maskana, because it's motzi, you apply the cheskes haguf, and you apply that happened later. So Reuven wins, and therefore you can take money from Shimon. So Reuven wins because you apply the cheskes haguf, and you assume the machat, the whole happened later. So even if Shimon hasn't paid Reuven yet, Reuven can say, I'm using a cheskes haguf to assume the animal was a shalem to the last possible moment. Give me the money you owe me. So Reuven, the seller, can use a cheskes haguf against Shimon, the buyer, in order to be motzi mamon, which is roughly parallel to our case, where the woman can use her cheskes haguf to delay the event of her becoming a ba'ula or a balas woman in order to be motzi mamon from her husband. So, based on that, the Shev Shmaitzer, the Kselos, is saying, Nira Taima de Hachmilsa, for who? Line number 3, 2nd paragraph. The Vada Hecha de Leka Re'isa, the Ein Makom Nistapek, Vadai Lo Nachtina Lesveka. We don't have to worry about a suffix. Kigon Tabach Shalakach Behema. Let's say Ayala sell you an animal. Venevda. And the animal gets lost. Okay? And now you come and say, Rabbi Tarigan, okay, this is not a cheskes haguf. He's using something which is clear to you that he's going to like in a cheskes haguf too. He says, it would be clear to everyone in this room that let's say I sell you an animal and you don't pay me on time. And now I come on next week and you say, where's my money? And you say, well, the animal was a trefa. And I say, well, prove it. Oh, I can't. The animal's lost. Is that a latest asafek? No. It's a joke. You can't just make a claim out of nowhere the animal's a trefa. In the Gemara's case, the animal was a trefa. This is not the Gemara's case. We want to know when it happened. But you're just making something out of nowhere. That's not something we even entertain. Show me the animal. You're making a claim against normal human custom. There's no reus, so it's not like you've been animal with a machat. So read it again. Ayal bought an animal. He's a butcher. He bought it from his herdsman. Venevda. The animal gets lost. V'tolei amochen. I say, Ayal, where's my money? V'adai lo matzi lokeach ton. Ayal can't say, Emor treifa ha'isav, emeki mechitas. Kivon deleka makum reisa l'safek. Vadai lo nachtina l'safek. We're not even going to consider this as a safek. V'im kain, skipping a line, b'machat shenimtza, ha'reisa l'faneinu, same thing we can say, even if now the animal is here, and the needle is in the lungs, shegari ma'safek, Amrinan hach klala kol mishan lola hasafik reshuso alaf araya. We're going to assume that it's not even a suffix, and okay, the language isn't as clear as I thought it was.
It's
a far jump. Okay. That's right. It makes one to the other. Yeah. I thought the Shev Shemaitz says it. He says it as a paradigm. Then his language becomes less clear. Could this be why cheskes haguf is motzi mamon? Not because it's a stronger suffix resolver, but because it tells us that anything before the event discovery, you don't have to worry about. Now, if this is true, and we're not going to continue now because it's too late, and I see people are losing their stamina when they pick this up on Sunday, but it's very important, very important. If it's not about how we solve the suffix, but which questions we ask, which questions we're forced to ask and which questions we can ignore, which is always a very different view of halachic procedure, not how we solve a suffix, but whether we even entertain the suffix. All of a sudden, the issue of which questions we ask and which questions we don't ask may not just be a question of timeline. We ask questions about earlier times, later times. You don't ask questions about earlier times. We ask questions about the most proximate moment or questions about before. Once it becomes not how do you adjust your reality and how you provide evidence and answer, svekos, but what svekos you ask, all of a sudden, that may be impacted not just by a timeline and I'm only going to ask questions about the latest point in the timeline and not going to ask questions about the earlier point in the timeline. I may have to introduce other factors into determining what questions I ask and what questions I don't ask. So now that I'm abstracting it, all of a sudden more factors are going to influence it. And this is going to help us solve Rava on Sunday, where Rava said that I can't just draw a line.
I just draw the line, and I assume it happened the best possible minute. The best possible minute should place me somewhere here, which would mean the woman would win. Why should that question of how long I extend the cheskas haguf be impacted by the point of discovery? Why should discovering it here prevent my ability from delaying it to the last possible minute that it happened here? Which would be the case that one would win, right? You see the offset? The Mishnah says if I discover it here, then I have to assume it happened here. If I discover it here, then I can assume it happened here.
Would be the same logic? You mean to be Aida's author?
No, that's Rav Ashi. Rava didn't say that. Rava said, anyone remember Rava's language? Did I give Rava to say?
No.
We got it. So we're going to see Rava on Sunday. Rava said, I'm sorry, that's Rav Ashi's solution. Rava says it has nothing to do with the L, so I'm erasing the L from the board. Nothing to do with the L. Rava said, if I discover it here, in the Rishus, okay, remember, I need more chalk. This is the Rishus of the father. This is the Rishus of the Baal. So there are different Rishios, but that doesn't affect the halacha. If I'll place it here, he'll win, she'll win. If I place it here, he will win. So the event, I need to know the event. So Cheskas HaGuf should tell me just delay the event to the last possible moment. What difference does it make if I discover it here or discover it here? In either case, I'll place the event here, which is a victory for the woman. So why should the discovery force me about when to place the event? That's what Rava will say. We'll see on Sunday. If I discover it here, then I can place the event here, which would mean she would. If I discover it here, then I have to place the event here, which means he would. Why would discovering the event alter my ability to just apply the cheskes haguf to the last possible game, which would mean the woman should win every case? That's somehow we have to try to crack Rava, but it's eating it. Get to that Gemara several way. So let's just summarize what we've seen today. Assuming Chazaka is regular Chazaka de Meikara, so then we have to team it with the Bari B'Shema, and there are three different ways to learn Bari B'Shema. We can either learn 1+1, we can learn Bari B'Shema plus, or we can learn divide and conquer. You should take care of some of the Chesed. We saw that it's not a regular chazaka. What do we see? It's not a regular chazaka. One is Rava, that it's chazaka, haguf beats everything else. We saw daf lamed vav, according to Rashi, that a cheskas haguf alone, without a bari b'shema, because all we have is taninan. We saw the Mishnah on Ayin Hey and Ravashi, at least that you don't have a bari b'shema. So we had to develop new ideas for cheskas haguf. One new idea is that it's a beirur, and as a beirur, it's stronger than hochachos. It beats out the cheskas haguf. It doesn't need bar v'shema. You can both see mamon, at least according to the Gamliel. If it is a beirur, it may require a taina, as Gabi said, and that's why we're not above. We can't generate a bar v'shema, but we can generate a taina. The other approach is to say it's not a beirur, but it's not a leidas hasafik. Of course, you see the parallel between this and Svek Svega. Just like by Svek Svega, whether or not it's a beirur or conditions which questions we ask, we're involved in the same thing, not a leidas hasafik, which means the things that naturally occur, I don't have to worry about their change until I actually see them. Once I see them, I can assume they happen unless Hashem tells me, Hashem is giving me a frame of reference. You see a change, lock it into that moment. Don't say, oh, maybe it happened a few minutes ago. Well, it's more psychologically likely that it happened now. No, you can ignore the past. Anything before the last minute, before the change, in your mind can be treated as a bondage. Just like something which is only also due to Svegos is not awesome. Something that happened 2 minutes ago, I don't have to even worry about that being a something. So I can assume that any time before this, definitely she's a psula, and therefore she'd be mostly mamu from her husband. We're going to see that this may be what Rava is describing, and therefore Rava says, when it's not just time, okay? Who likes physics? I'm very bad at physics, right? But right, there are some things that you gauge by two factors, right? What's velocity? Velocity is
speed and direction.
Speed and direction, right? Mass is
And some things are weight. Weight is weight, right? Weight is one variable. Weight is how much it weighs. But some things are two variables.
Weight is gravity. Mass is weight.
So here, Rav is saying, let's gauge time and rishus. Cheskes of an hour mind is just time, delayed to the last possible minute. Rav is going to say, no, let's make it a multivariable question. Let's gauge time based on the discovery of the event in whose rishus, which shouldn't impact it. Why should I care? I'm just gauging time and push it off to the last possible minute. Maybe the strength of Cheskes HaGuf forces you to say, well, it's allowing me not to ask certain questions, but at certain points I'm not allowed to not ask certain questions because there are other variables that determine which questions I ask. I'm just solving Svegas, I solve Svegas in time. I push it off to the last possible minute. Not just solving Svegas, I'm determining which questions I ask. Then all of a sudden there may be certain factors that force me to ask questions in different unrelated to time. I don't just measure time. That's the secret. And this is the hardest thing to do. I love it. I wish I could just spend a whole life learning. It's just so many layers and layers and layers. But that's what Rav is setting up. We'll see reference on. It's really fascinating, Rav.
Can you? I don't know if this is even a problem, but once you're dealing with where it was discovered, so now you have like those walls were in the father's house. So now can you say that Rav for a time in the father's house?
No, it wasn't three years. Don't run away from the problem. You're trying to make adjustments or kintas to make the problem logical. Rav is giving us a setup, a conceptualization. He's forcing us to say, even though Cheskes HaGuf allows you to delay the timing, the point of discovery forces you to ask certain questions that you can't solve just by making time. It's time and rishus. And we're going to have to see why should that make a difference. We'll get to that in Rav Hashem on Sunday. And then we'll see on Sunday, if we have some time, is we'll see different forms of Cheskes HaGuf that will help us determine, is it a bear or is it a non-question? Oh, is this a Cheskes HaGuf? Is this a Cheskes HaGuf? Because after all, living the world didn't just say something on your base. It said something in your Gemara. It said something on design. So we're going to have to go Cheskes HaGuf hunting. Parsha told us. Cheskes HaGuf hunting. Thanksgiving. Go Cheskes HaGuf hunting on Sunday. Oh, this is a Cheskes HaGuf. Why does it tell about Cheskes HaGuf? But we're using the prism of Dafayin Vav to try to tell what a Cheskes HaGuf is. If you're following even a little bit of this, it's really good. Don't worry. You weren't even capable of this a couple of months ago. This is very, very, very sophisticated. I mean, I was talking to one of the other rabbis, and I said, you really should go into this. You know, it's like, I think it was like playing on Skippy, just like Cheskes HaGuf. Like, could you give me your nice, easy share? Cheskes HaGuf is this, is this, and two or three nafkaminas, and you never have known how to get there. You get there through Lama Vav and Ayin Vav, and Ayin Vav is a maze. So, M-A-Z-E, not M-A-I-Z-E. Shabbat Shalom, everyone. Shabbat Shalom. Happy Thanksgiving. Shabbat Shalom. Yes.